I'm with the Society for American Baseball Research. Today is March 18th, 2002, and I'm in Osceola County Stadium in Kissimmee, Florida, to interview Jack Bellingham. This interview will be available to Sabre members for research and will be posted on the internet. Is that okay with you?
That's perfect.
Okay. What are you doing here at the ballpark?
Well, I've been working for the Houston Astros for the last 16 years, and I've been a minor league pitching coach in Kissimmee, Florida, which is Florida State League. I live in Orlando, which is close to home, so I've really had a great job in baseball. I've been able to live at home and still be in professional baseball.
Best of both worlds,
but last year they sold the team to Lexington, Kentucky. I chose not to go to a full season team, and they were nice enough to let me have the rookie league in Martinsville, Virginia, so I spent the summer in Martinsville, Virginia.
That was the first year you did that?
First year I did that. I stay down here. I still can stay at home until June, until the draft is over with, and I go up to Martinsville.
Now, how old are you?
59.
And where were you born?
I was born in Orlando, raised in Winter Park, which is a little town right outside of Orlando.
And how many brothers or sisters?
Got a brother 3 years younger than I am, and a sister 3 years older than I am.
And how did you become interested in baseball?
It's something I just was around and played all my life. I was, like I said, I was raised in Winter Park, Florida, and there was a little college named Rollins College over there, and I was raised right by the ballpark, and just always messed around. Years ago, they used to play football and baseball down there, and I was more or less, that was our playground in the neighborhood, and I just became acquainted with some of the players on the Rollins team and the coach, and they let me bat boy and would play catch with me and let me hit and everything at a young age. And then they brought a little league into Winter Park when I was about 9 years old. And I just played little league and went on through the system. You know, I played Pony League and Babe Ruth. And
because you played in high school too?
And I played in high school. And actually, I signed out of high school. I tell people nowadays that's probably the worst mistake I ever made, but I really wasn't a student. I wished I would have gotten some type of education, but I was fortunate. I signed right out of high school and started playing.
And during high school, when you were basically a pitcher?
I was a pitcher. I played outfield, first base, shortstop. Usually in high school, a pitcher is some of the better athletes, and they can hit and play other positions. As soon as I signed a professional contract, the hitting went down the drain, and I just concentrated on pitching.
Okay. Now, I understand there's some baseball in your family. You're a relative of Christy Matthews?
Yeah, relative of Christy Matthews through my grandmother on my father's side, my grandmother. He was a cousin of hers. They were up in New York City. They were from New York State, Monticello, New York, and he was from up north somewhere, and I just understand that, you know, she gave me some articles about Christy when I was younger, but he was like a long-lost cousin.
So you have the genes.
So somewhere, I think I might be, something happened, and I could throw a baseball not quite as well as he could, but not hard enough to make it to the big leagues.
Now, growing up, did you have any favorite player or team that you rooted for?
Well, really, years ago, being raised in Orlando area, the old Washington Senators, Minnesota Twins, Washington Senators,
so
had spring training there. And I became, there was a gentleman that lived across the street from us, rented a house 1 year. His name was Sherry Robinson.
Sherry Robertson.
Robertson. He was Calvin Griffith's, I think, half-brother. And he was a pitcher, kind of an outfielder, and he'd bring bats and balls back. And I'd rake his yard, mow his yard in the spring, and he would give me a couple old balls or old bats. And I think that's the first time I ever came around anything professionally, and he was just a great man, and I always looked up to him.
Let me tell you something about Sherry. Not many people realize him. It's an unfortunate thing, but he was playing for the Senators third base, I think, during World War II, probably 1944, and he had a scatter arm, and he overthrew the first base, on the ground ball, he overthrew first base. It went into the stands and killed somebody.
Oh, really? No, I've never heard that. Well,
Shame.
I know he had a daughter, and I don't know her name, but we were playing kick the can with an old coffee can. The edges used to be real sharp years and years ago, and unfortunately the can hit me between the eyes, and I had to have four or five stitches between the eyes, but that was years ago.
What were the circumstances of your signing a organized baseball contract?
Well, actually, I had a couple of scouts look at me in high school, and that's before the it was free agency, actually. You know, if you had five scouts looking for you, five scouts wanted to sign you. I only had two. I had a Yankee scout, and his last name was Kennedy. I think it was Ray Kennedy. And my baseball coach took me to the Orlando team. They had a D-ball team in Orlando with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He took me over there to try out, and they got interested in me. There was a local scout by the name of Zach Taylor, who was an older scout. I think he was with the Braves at the time.
Was he a manager one time with the Browns?
He was a manager with the Browns. He looked at me, and at that time I was 6'5 and a half, weighed 165 pounds, and his evaluation, I think, I heard later on that he thought I was too skinny and too weak, would never be able to throw the ball hard enough.
What did your family think about you taking up a baseball career?
They were happy. My mom and dad were very supportive of all my sports through high school. Matter of fact, they were one of the parents that always would drive the team or volunteer to drive. Back then, you didn't have buses to take the teams around. Parents had to volunteer to drive the teams, basketball, baseball. So they were always volunteering to take us all over, and they were very supportive. And when I had the opportunity to sign, they backed me up 100%.
The Dodgers were a pretty successful major league team at that time, and that have a bearing on your signing with them?
Not really. It was a money thing more than anything, and it wasn't a whole lot of money at that time.
You got a bonus?
I got a $5,000 bonus, and they called it a contingent. It was contingent on if they wanted to keep you or not after 90 days or 60 days. They gave me, I think it was $3,000 to sign and $300 a month, or and $2,000 after 60 days if they liked me and decided to keep me. That was the Dodgers off me, the Yankees. The Yankees offered me, if I'm not mistaken, $1,500. They wanted to send me to the Appalachian League for $300 a month. So I chose the $5,000, which wasn't much of a decision, with the Dodgers, and stay at home and play in Orlando.
Not too many people were able to do that, stay at home.
No, I've been very fortunate. You know, being from Florida, I've spent a lot of time in my baseball career and spring training and everything in the state.
Okay, so your first year was 1961 with Orlando, and you got into 12 games and one win, six losses.
Right. It was right out of high school. I was nervous, signed in June, and this was a full season team, so they had already been playing. And I was more or less kind of probably the 12th guy on the pitching staff. I was young. I remember my first game I pitched, I had a no-hitter going for seven innings, or six and two-thirds, and the playing manager for the opposing team got a base hit off me. It was a seven-inning ball game. It was the first game of a doubleheader. I got a single off of me in the seventh inning to break up my no-hitter. And there used to be a pitcher by the name of Bill Kelso. He was a scout in this organization for years. He had a grand slam for us, and I won the ball game 4-0.
That was your win that year.
That was the win that year.
You started off great, though.
Yeah. And I didn't really pitch that bad. You know, I was a nervous little kid right out of high school playing in Florida State League, which was, at that time, a little better league than some of the other D leagues. You know, we had an okay team and nothing to jump up and down about. But I was tall and skinny, like I said, when I graduated from high school. I was 6'5 and a half, 165 pounds, but I did have a real long, lean delivery and could throw the ball pretty hard.
Who was the manager?
The manager was Ed Serrano. He was in the Dodger system for years, but he was my first manager.
Now, next year, 1962, you were still in the Florida State League, but then you were with St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg. The Dodgers moved their team from Orlando to St. Petersburg, and I played with them. It was with the Dodgers. I stayed with the Dodgers seven years in the minor leagues.
Okay. Then the next year, you went to Salisbury in Western Carolina.
Right.
Was that also Class D?
That was also Class D. That supposedly was actually a step down in the Dodger organization from St. Pete. So actually, at that time, I was almost working my way down instead of up.
But you had a good year, 9-6.
But I had a good year. It was my third year. I was 20 at the time, I got with a manager by the name of George Sugar. He ended up being a coach for the Cincinnati Reds when I played there, and he showed some confidence in me, and I started in relief for him, and I think that was probably the first step I really took that year as far as becoming a major league pitcher.
You were doing more starting than relief?
Yeah, I started most of the time, but I did relief.
Were you getting much instruction during these first couple of years?
Well, back when I played, you did get a lot of instruction. I came up with the Dodgers. I had instructors like Roger Craig, Red Adams, who ended up being a pitching coach with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Tommy Lasorda was a scout, but he came to spring training. An older gentleman by the name, I remember, I really liked him, by the name of Goldie Holt. He was an older gentleman that helped me out a lot. But you mostly got your instruction during spring training. You only had a manager and a trainer at that time, went out with the minor league teams. And coaches came by during the year, but it was more or less they told you what they wanted you to do, and you better keep it going that way.
In spring training, did you go to train at Vero Beach with the Dodgers? Or your...
No, it was spring training with the Vero Beach. Vero Beach has been there for 100 years, and actually when I signed in 61, they used to have the old Army barracks. Now they've got like a motel situation. But 61 I signed. I didn't go to spring training because I signed in June out of high school, but that year they had 11 minor league teams, and the following year in 62 they cut it back to like 7 or 8 teams. So I went to spring training, and I was a young kid and I was nervous as heck, and they had to release probably about 100 ball players because they brought most of the guys in and they released them because they eliminated the teams. And
Was that a business, according to the economy?
I really don't know. That was back in 61. I think I really can't answer that. All I know is I was in a room with four guys, and I was the only guy left at the end of spring training.
Okay. Now, next year in 64, you went out to the California League in Santa Barbara.
Right.
Is this the furthest you had been from home?
Furthest from I've been from home, first time I was on an airplane. Jumped on an airplane out of Vero Beach, and back then the Dodgers had their Dodger plane. It was a four-engine prop jet, and jumped on that airplane and went out to Santa Barbara. You know, they stopped off. I think they had a team in Albuquerque at the time, the Double-A team, so they dropped the team off in Albuquerque and then went on to L.A., dropped us off. But I was only out there a month. Went out there, got a little homesick. I was engaged to my wife, and wasn't pitching much. And actually, it was one of the only times in my career that I felt about giving up baseball because I wasn't making any money and I wasn't pitching. I didn't feel like I was going anywhere. And the farm director's name was Fresco Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
The Dodgers. And he became general manager later on, but he was the farm director. I called him up, and I was absolutely in California. The expenses were much more than they were in Florida and Salisbury, North Carolina. I said, I can't live on $450 a month. I'd like to get a $50 raise, and can you please send me home back to St. Pete? And he said he'd see what he can do. And about a week later, the manager came up to me, and he says, I'm sorry to tell you, we're going to send you back to St. Pete. And I almost wanted to hug him. His name was Al Ronning. He was a catcher.
Well, you did well at getting back at St. Pete, 7-3.
Well, I went to St. Pete, and I came, first time I was associated with a manager by the name of Roy Hartsfield. And he again pulled me to the side like George Sugar had in Salisbury, showed confidence in me. He says, the Dodgers are very strong in pitching, which they were at that time. They were always known for having a lot of pitching throughout their organization. And he says, I'm going to make you a reliever. You might have a chance to move through the system better as a reliever than a starter. And he put me in the bullpen, and I relieved most of the year for him in St. Pete. And I started a few games when he wanted a decent start or something or other. He would let me start. But I relieved and had a good year, and that really, really was a boost.
And your earned run average was 1.03?
Yeah, I had a fantastic year that year. And actually, that winter, after that season, I went to Nicaragua and played winter ball. And the next year, I went to Spokane, Washington, started the season, which was at that time, I went from D-ball to AAA. And only lasted a month. Played for Duke Snyder out there, and they sent me to Albuquerque.
And you were 7-3 again there.
And Roy Hartsfield, who was my manager in St. Pete, had gone to Albuquerque, and this, again, I was sent down to him at Albuquerque, and he said, "You're my stopper. You're my man, right-handed guy I'm going to." And I had another good year for him.
And in 66, you were back in Spokane.
Right. I went back there with him. He went back up. He went from Albuquerque to Spokane, which was our AAA team at the time. And I relieved for him. The Dodgers at that time felt that I could make it possibly as a big in the bit to the big leagues as a reliever, so they kept me in the bullpen.
And in 67, you were in Spokane.
Went back again with him in Spokane. You know, it took me a couple of years in Spokane to catch on.
What was your best pitch?
I was fortunate. I had a two-seam sinker ball. Was my best pitch. It moved as long as I kept it down. And with the years I spent in the minor leagues, my control got better, kept the ball down in the strike zone, and it was just a tough pitch to hit.
Okay, in 68, you finally made the big leagues.
Finally.
Right. After can you remember your first day?
I can remember pitching against St. Louis and my knees shaking. That's about all I can remember. Walter Alston was the manager, and back when I got to the big leagues in 68, you know, rookies didn't say a whole lot. They just sat in the corner of the dugout, and when the manager told you to warm up, you warm up, went out there. I remember Buzzy Bavese telling me about 2 days before the season started, there was about five pitchers that were fighting for three spots. And Phil Regan, who was a reliever for the Dodgers at the time, kind of took me up underneath his wing, was helping me out, and we stopped by the office one day, and Phil had to ask Buzzy something, and Phil and Buzzy came out in the lobby, and Buzzy looked at me and he says, what are you doing here? And I said, "Well, I'm just messing around with Phil. He's looking for an apartment." And he looked at me and he says, "Are you looking for an apartment?" And I said, "No, sir. You know, they haven't made the decision yet." And he said, "Well, don't tell Walter Alston, I'll tell you this, but you can start looking too." So that's the first time I ever knew I made a big league club. And after spending 7 years in the minor leagues, I walked out and looked around Dodger Stadium, and it was probably the happiest moment of my life as far as baseball career.
Now, some of the team pitchers on it were Drysdale, Osteen, Don Sutton.
Sutton was there, Osteen was there, Bill Singer was still there. Drysdale, I kind of idolized by Drysdale. I tried to, with me being tall and thin and right-handed, kind of low three-quarter delivery. You know, I didn't really clone myself after Drysdale, but just being around him and seeing the competitor that he was and how much he loved the game really just helped me the year I played with him.
Now, did you perhaps emerge as the best reliever because you were in 50 games that year, which is a lot for a rookie?
Right.
So they must have a lot of confidence in you.
Well, they did. They showed a lot of confidence. I mean, we didn't have a very good record that year. It was probably a building year for the Dodgers. I think at that time it was the worst season they had when I was out there since they moved to L.A. But they had Phil Regan, who they ended up trading. And I was the right-handed relievers. I got a few saves, but not very many. But then I became a setup type guy for Jim Brewer, who was the left-hander, a screwball, and he got the most of the saves. But I felt very fortunate that year that I did. I had a pretty good year. And
3-0,
and I think I had six or seven saves. And I had a decent ERA, so it was it really helped me get my big league career started with a pretty decent year.
You appeared in more games than any other Dodger pitcher that year.
Did I really?
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know that. I wished I would have had an agent. I would have maybe got some more money.
Do you remember your first win of the three?
No, I don't. But I remember my first saves. I came in against the Mets. I got two saves against the Mets and a doubleheader in Shea Stadium. But those were my first two saves. But the win, I really don't have any idea what my first win was.
And you did not give up any home runs. Pitched 71 innings without a home run.
Yeah, that was kind of became my goal. And actually, there's a story where we went into Philadelphia, and they had the short right field fence in the old ballpark in Philadelphia. And Johnny Callison came up and hit a high fly ball to right field, hit off the top of the wall. And I'm sitting there, come back in. And it did come back in.
Okay, now the next year, you ended up with another team. Houston, what happened?
Well, there's a little thing before that. I was picked up in the expansion draft. by Montreal off the Dodgers. After 68 season, the baseball had the expansion draft for Montreal and San Diego. And I was picked up in the first round. The Dodgers didn't protect me. I was picked up in the first round by Montreal. I went to spring training with Montreal, but at that year, there was a trade made where Houston traded Rusty Staub to Montreal for Jesus Alou and Don Clendenin. And Don Clendenin, the story I have got, it varied a little bit. I talked to Don Clendenin this year, matter of fact, and he said that wasn't the whole story. The whole story was some money situation, too. But he had played for Harry Walker in Pittsburgh, and from what I understand, he didn't want to go back. He wanted to go stay in Montreal. So he kind of refused to go, and that was unheard of back then. But he said he would quit baseball rather than go. And at the end of spring training with Montreal, they sent me to Houston to finalize that trade. So I went to spring training with Montreal, never played for him, and ended up with Houston that year.
Well, of course, you never actually got to Montreal. How did you feel about him? He was Canadian, and was further away from home, too.
Well, I would have loved to go. That's one of my stories in my career, but I was looking forward to go. They were going to make me a starter, and I'd pitched 2 years, or I pitched through my rookie year out of the bullpen. Gene Mock saw me pitch one game. I started for Don Drysdale the year before, pitched 8 shutout innings against Pittsburgh. And Montreal drafted me as a starter, but I had a terrible spring training. I think when they had a deal to work with Houston, they got rid of me. But
so you went to Houston, which was the last place club the previous year.
Right.
They finished fifth, I think. Harry Walker, the manager, he was called Harry the Hat.
Harry the Hat Walker.
He's the one that got the hit that drove him into slaughter.
Yeah, he was, you know, I think so. And then, he hit 300. He was a good hitter. Him and his brother, Dixie Walker, were both good baseball people.
How was he as a manager?
As a manager, I guess he was all right. I don't know. I wasn't, the year I was there, we started coming up with pretty decent ball clubs. To me, a manager of baseball has to know the game, and he evidently knew the game, and he handled the players okay. I think that's a big thing, and you got to have good coaches and good people around you to become a good manager. And he had a good pitching coach in Jim Owens, and Jim Owens helped me in Houston.
Some of the players on that team were Riley Durker, who went 20-13 that year.
Right, he was...
Don Wilson, had he pitched his no-hitters yet?
No, he pitched one, and I can't remember what year it was. It was one of my favorite moments where people ask me about some of my game-watching famous moments, and we're in Cincinnati, and Jim Maloney pitched no-hitter against us one night, and the next night Don Wilson went out and pitched no-hitter against Cincinnati. So back-to-back no-hitters I saw. He could throw the ball hard. To me, Durker was the best pitcher we had on the staff. He was just a heady pitcher. He had good stuff. He located the ball. Don was more of a power pitcher. We had Denny Lemaster. We had Wade Blassingame. You know, we had pretty good pitching staff.
And Joe Morgan was one of the team.
Joe Morgan was the second baseman at that time. We had the Cannon in center field. Jimmy Wynn. We had Doug Rader. We had Cesar Cedeno coming up. We had Geronimo. We had some nucleus for a pretty good ball club. We had Johnny Edwards, who I feel was one of the better catchers that I ever threw to. I was very fortunate in my career throwing to very good catchers.
Now, the first year you went 6-7 with Houston. The next year, 13-9. Were you basically a starter?
My first year, I was in the bullpen all the time with Houston. My second year, I started out of the bullpen, and then a couple of injuries, Harry asked me if I wanted to start, and I did. And I pitched well, and I started for the next 10 years in the big leagues. So that's where I got the decisions that year. I was in more games as a starter, and I was out there for the decisions. But that really started me on my way as a starting pitcher. I'd come up through the minor league system with the Dodgers as a reliever. My first 2.5 years, I was in the big leagues as a reliever, and And I felt like I could have been successful out of the bullpen, but once I started starting, I felt that that was my role as a starter.
Did you put on any weight? Put on any weight since you?
I gotten up to 190 pounds when I broke into baseball in '68. When I was with Houston, I went to Venezuela one winter in winter ball, and that was the winter of, I want to say, '70. Went down there and I quit smoking, and I gained approximately 20 pounds. I came back to the States weighing 210, 212, and I stayed there most of my career, right around 212, 215. And actually, that was before the guns were around and velocity and all that other stuff. I had one scout, and it was the scout from Cincinnati. His name was Ray Shore, Snack Shore, they called him. He talked to me one day, and he says, "Why, what'd you do?" He says, "You look stronger and everything else." I says, "Well, I quit smoking, gained 20 pounds. He says, "Yeah, you might have added 6-8 inches on your fastball." They measured it by eyesight and just by language saying you added 6-8 inches on your fastball, which probably was maybe 3-4 miles an hour.
Now, after the 71 season with Houston, there was a trade.
Right.
You went to Cincinnati.
Big trade.
Right. Who was involved with that trade?
Well, you know, I hated to leave Houston because we really were enjoying it, and I saw Houston becoming a pretty good ball club. But once I got to Cincinnati, I was happier than heck, and that was supposedly one of the better trades Cincinnati had ever made. From Houston, Joe Morgan went, myself went, Cesar Geronimo went, Dennis Mankey, and Ed Armbruster. And Houston got Lee May, which is a great first baseman, Tommy Helms, an all-star second baseman, and then Jimmy Stewart, who was a great utility ball player. So it was a good, it was actually a good trade for both teams. It's just that at that time, Cincinnati, Joe Morgan fit into Cincinnati's lineup unbelievable. They moved into a new ballpark, Riverfront Stadium. They needed base hits, somebody with speed, and a good second baseman, rather than a Lee May hitting home runs. And Joe Morgan fit in that lineup with Bench, Rose, Griffey, you know, all those guys, Concepcion, just fit in with the team.
So you missed out on Crosley Field, huh?
As a Red, but I played there coming up with the Dodgers and in Houston, and it was, I was fortunate. When I came up in '68, they still had Forbes Field, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, some of the older ballparks, then they started tearing them down, but I just felt good about being able to play in some of them.
Okay, and you were basically a starting pitcher with Cincinnati.
Yeah, right. They got me as a starting pitcher.
Of course, you had Perez, Morgan, Rose, Bench, Concepcion, and Sparky Anderson.
And Sparky Anderson.
What about Sparky?
Well, Sparky, I've gotten to understand Sparky's way of managing a little bit more now that I'm in the coaching part of it. But Sparky and I had a good relationship. I probably didn't appreciate Sparky as much as from a pitcher's standpoint as a regular standpoint, as a Morgan or a Rose or something like that, because whenever you're competing out on the mound and Sparky comes out and gets you and you think you can still do the job and he takes you out of the ball game, you're not a very happy camper. Sparky was always named for, his nickname was Captain Hook.
Yeah.
He always came out and got you early. So therefore, when he just got the reputation, you knew that you could still pitch, but he came out and got you anyway. And it caused some differences, but Sparky to me, I see him quite a bit. I went on a cruise with him this past winter, and he's one of the finest gentlemen in the game of baseball. I mean, he was good. And now that I, like I said, now I'm a coach. I'm a pitching coach, and I take some kids out, and they're unhappy with me because I take them out. So it's like, I told Sparky on the cruise this year, I said, you know, it's kind of like when you're a kid and your parents are telling you something to do, and you don't think your parents are very smart sometimes, but then when you become an adult, you realize your parents are a little bit smarter, and that's kind of the relationship we had back then.
Now, that year you went 12-12, but you led the staff in innings pitched, you know that, 218 innings.
Well, I didn't know I led the staff in innings pitch, but I was fortunate. I was always, I could still knock on wood because I throw batting practice every day. I was always healthy. I always took the ball every fifth day, and I could always, being a sinker ball pitcher, I could always more than likely keep the ball in the ballpark most of the time. I gave up my share of home runs, but I'd keep the team in the game for a good you know, five, six, seven innings.
Of course, that sinker ball helped out on double plays.
Double plays. I had Davey Concepcion, Morgan.
Combination.
Right, and the AstroTurf, they brought AstroTurf in. A lot of people told me that they thought AstroTurf would hurt me, but actually AstroTurf, I felt, helped me because I was a sinker ball pitcher, got a lot of ground balls, and the infielders were quick, so they could play back a little bit more on the AstroTurf, and you never had bad hops. It always took true hops. So it actually, with the infielders that I had, if I would have had slow infielders and not good infielders, it might have hurt me, but I had good infielders, so it helped me.
The best. That year you got into the World Series. You know, the Reds lost the first two games and they picked you to pitch the third game. Remember that game?
Yes, I do. I pitched six,
I think it was against
eight shutouts.
Odom, was it Blue Moon Odom?
I think it was Blue Moon Odom. Pitched eight shutout innings. I had just had good stuff. It was, cut the ball down, two strikes all during the ball game. Got a couple big double, I got one big double play from the infield. But I was really never in a jam the whole game. I just felt, you know, the World Series is where you dream about being. And you're out there anticipating the game. You're nervous. You know, I always had an upset stomach every start, any time. But this particular
day. You and Bill Russell.
It was just a little bit more, yeah. But, I mean, even during the season, I had an upset stomach. But once you grab the baseball, start throwing in the bullpen, that all starts going away, and once the game starts, you're in your own little world out there. And, you know, that's the best. When you're out there in the World Series and you're pitching well, there's nothing better.
And then went to the last final game, and you started that game.
Yeah, I started that game. I think I'm not real sure. I think it went five innings, six innings, and Sparky had to pinch hit for me in the sixth inning. Like, there's a couple men on bases loaded or something, and I think Hal McGray flight out to deep left center. There was a game that I felt that I had everything going, and there was two outs, and I wished I could have hit, but he made that choice.
Well, you pitched 13 and two-thirds innings in that World Series and did not give up a run.
Right. Well, I had a good series, you know, and that kind of got me going, got my confidence going. Like you said, I was 12-12 that year, and went to spring training with everything going the next year.
Yeah, next year you had one of your best years, maybe the best year. You pitched 293 innings. My God, 290, you don't hear that anymore.
Yeah, you don't hear that anymore.
Well,
they say that led the league, but I think I tied. It led the league, but I tied with Carlton.
Okay,
it
could have been led or tied.
I don't know, but Carlton and I both had right around that area, but...
Did you have a chance to win the 20th game?
That year, I had one time to win the 20th game. And it's another one of the differences Sparky and I had. Sparky gave me the ball, and it was just before the playoffs. We were in the playoffs. It was my last start. Sparky says, you got the ball for nine innings, which was telling me that I had it for the whole game no matter what, and he'd give me an opportunity to win. Well, we were losing like 3-2, I think, going in the sixth inning. Now I'm up at the plate. And I look up, and he's motioning for me to come to the dugout. He pinched it for me, so I didn't I didn't have a chance to win. So I wasn't happy with him at that time. But sitting on the other side of the fence right now, he took me out of the game because I was going to start one of the playoff games, and he didn't want me to throw too many pitches because I had to start in a couple of days.
That year, you started more than 40 games more than any other Cincinnati hurler. You got seven shutouts, which led the team.
Right. That was by far my best year. I was really, like I said, coming off the World Series, 13 innings, the World Series, there's nothing better than riding high going into spring training, and I carried that on through the year.
And you made the All-Star team.
Yes, sir. Finally made the All-Star team, you know.
Played in Kansas City.
Played in Kansas City, didn't get an opportunity to pitch. That's another one of Sparky's and my stories because he was holding me back because I had to start in 2 days. So I didn't get the pitch in the World Series. So, and he was the All-Star game because he was the manager. But it was just an honor. Pitching wasn't that big a thing. The honor is making the team.
And in 1974, you had another 19-game winning season.
Right. That was, I would have to say, my lucky year. I won 19 games. I had tendonitis, the only time I really had any type of injury in my career. And my shoulder was bothering most every year, all year long. I probably only threw, I don't even know, 220 innings or something like that. 212 innings, and that is 80 innings less or so than I did the year before and won 19 ball games. So everything was working for me that year. I'd barely get five innings in, my arm would start bothering me, and then I'd come out of the ball game. We'd score a couple of runs if we were behind. And it was just one of those years. And again, you never know what might happen. I still grabbed the ball every fifth day and went out there.
The team finished second that year. At that time, were they called the Big Red Machine?
Yeah, as soon as I got over there, they were called the Big Red Machine. You know, I don't know who gave them that word. There was a Big Red Machine that came out on the field after it rained to suck the water up off the field. And I think that's where the big machine came out. And then all of a sudden, everybody started calling the team the Big Red Machine.
In 75, you guys were back in the World Series again. You had 15 wins, 10 losses. Another good year.
Yeah, pretty decent year. I was 75. I was still pitching well, but I could see that, you know, my stuff wasn't quite as sharp. But I still had a pretty good year. I've been around for a while. Wasn't the year that I had in 73.
In the World Series, you win three games, but there was no decisions.
No decisions. 75. I started game two against Bill Lee and got no decisions in that. And then I was supposed to start game six, but we got rained out 3 days in a row. And we had a pitcher by the name of Gary Nolan, who was a good pitcher. And after we got rained out two or three days, Sparky decided to go back with him. He had pitched in Cincinnati. And Sparky knew that I had a durable arm, I could come in relief. So it happened just the way Sparky thought it might happen, is that we didn't win game six. That's when Carlton Fist hit the big home run. And I came into relief early in that game. And then in game seven, Gullett started, and I came in relief for Gullett.
The second time you were in a game seven.
Yep, second time I was in game seven, but I was in reliever at that time. But we won that one. That was the big one. Big Red Machine was there. We were Big Red Machine, but we hadn't won anything.
Morgan hit the single over second.
Right. I think we won it on nothing spectacular. It was just a drop-in single.
I think they were ahead 3-0, though.
You know, I don't know. I can't remember. All I know is I got a ring at home.
And in 1976, you were 12-10. And World Series against the Yankees.
World Series again against the Yankees, but I went in the Yankees, they put me in the bullpen. We had Don Gullett, we had, if I'm not mistaken, Pat Zachary had come up as a rookie then, pitched very well. And we went into Philadelphia, and just my last start during the season, I hurt my arm underneath and couldn't pitch in the playoffs. We went into Philadelphia and I think swept them in three. That's when we played a five-game series. And everybody pitched well, so they decided they'd keep me in the bullpen. And the only appearance I got in that game was I relieved Fred Norman. I want to say the second game of the World Series. We won the two at home, and we went into New York and won the first two there, and we went home.
Yeah, you won in relief.
Yeah, I won in relief, Fred Norman.
Over Catfish, huh?
Yeah, I can't remember who I beat, but I know that it was a pretty close ball game. I remember Tony Perez making a diving catch on a line drive down the first baseline, and I want to say Reggie Jackson hit it, which really helped me out.
In 1977, still with Cincinnati, you were 10-10, and Tom Seaver joined the team that year.
Yeah, Tom, terrific. He was an amazing person.
Did he pitch the no-hitter that year?
No, it couldn't have been that year. I would have remembered that. But he was, when he came over and joined our ball club, classy gentleman, very nice gentleman. And I really only played with him the remainder of the year. But he was everything you ever heard about him. I always heard about how nice a gentleman he was, how classy he was, how he worked hard, and how good he was. And he was good.
And that was your last year with Cincinnati.
Right.
Also in the National League.
Right.
You were traded to Detroit?
Yeah, well actually during the winter I was traded to Chicago Cubs. But I refused to trade because I was getting older, my stuff wasn't quite as good. And there's a rule in baseball, if you spend your last you have 10 or more years in the big league, and you spend your last five with the same team, you can void the trade.
Right.
So Dick Wagner flew to Orlando to talk to me, and he said, Chicago Cubs. And I went, no. You know, there was two teams I didn't want to go to at my age. I was 35 then. I could see myself losing my ability a little bit, and I didn't want to go in San Francisco because the Candlestick was colder than heck, and I didn't want to go to Wrigley because of the wind. And so I refused the trade. And then in spring training, he came up to him and he says, we got something working in Detroit. And Ralph Houck was the manager at the time, and Fred Gladding, who was my roommate in Houston, was the pitching coach. And I said yes, so I went to Detroit.
Now, Houck, was he as tough as they say?
Ralph Houck was probably tough. No, not at all. He was tough, grumpy, but he treated his players outstanding. To me, he was a player's manager. He was grumpy to the umpires. I saw films of him yelling and arguing at the umpires. I put him and Sparky at the top of two managers I've ever played for. He was outstanding. I just had a great time there in Detroit.
Did you notice any difference between the American League and National League?
I did, only they didn't have the base running in the American League at the time. You know, National League more went with stolen bases and hit and runs and everything else. The American League had the DH. They went more for the long ball, the home runs. They went for the big innings. Also, you did see a little difference in the strike zone. You know, they always said the American League's got a higher strike zone, and that was because of the cushion chest protectors and the balloon chest protectors stayed in the American League longer. And I did get some hanging, what I called hanging curveballs in the National League. Those hanging curveballs became strikes in the American League.
And Trammell and Whitaker were the...
Trammell and Whitaker were rookies then. Actually, they started the season. They had Steve Dillard and Mark Wagner. They were platooning. They had played one game against, I want to say, left-handers, and then Whitaker and Trammell would play against the right-handers. Well, it took them about a month to realize that Whitaker and Trammell were something special, so they became everyday second base shortstops. But they were fantastic. I felt, they called me Pops over in Detroit because I was 35, 36 years old at the time, and here's these 21-year-old kids coming up, and they had, you know, they had Jason Thompson, and they had Steve Kemp, and they had Lance Parrish, Whitaker and Trammell, and Roseman and Fidrich. The average age of the Detroit Tigers probably was about 22, 23 years old at that time.
You had a good year, 15-8.
Yep.
Maybe starting?
Started the whole time. Really made me happy because the reason Cincinnati got rid of me, because I was 35 years old, they had a young couple young pitchers coming up, and Paul Moskow, Soto, Alcala. They had three or four prospects coming up, and they told me I was getting up in age and probably couldn't do it as well as I used to. And when I went over there and won 15 games, it was just a real satisfaction feeling.
And the next year with Detroit, you got a new manager.
Sparky Anderson joined us again.
He followed you.
Yeah, he followed me. He followed me over there. And, you know, they got rid of me when I was in Cincinnati because I was too old. I pitched the remainder of the year with him that year. I think I ended up 10-10 or something.
10-7.
10-7. Signed to come back the next year. Came spring training. And he was right then. I was too old. I was 37 years old. My career was just about over with. They had, you know, four or five young pitchers coming up. And he put me in the bullpen. Then I think it was in June or May, they traded me to Boston, and I ended my career in Boston.
Okay. How'd you get along with the umpires?
Very well. Very well. Umpires have, big league umpires never give me a problem at all. And actually, I can't understand now being in the minor leagues. It's kind of a pet peeve of mine, and it is improving. The association's working on it to improve. there needs to be some type of communication between the umpires and the coaches. You know, I disagree 100% about players screaming and yelling at umpires and all this other stuff, but umpires, to me, sometimes in the minor leagues think that they're just a little bit bigger, better than the game. They're part of the game, and we're all here to work together. When I was in the big leagues, you work together with the big league umpires, you know. As long as you don't show them up and yell at them, you can work with them. I never had any problems with umpires in the big leagues. Matter of fact, this day, I still run into Bruce Froming, Dutch Leonard, a couple of guys that were there. Whenever I see him, I go up, make sure I go up and say hello to him.
Now, during your career, the Players Union really took off.
Right.
Were you able to get the benefit of some of that in your latter part of your
career? Well, you know, the money has changed so drastically since I played. The pension has always been pretty decent for all of the retired players, except for back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. That's something hopefully they're working on. When you're out of baseball, you're out of baseball, so you don't have much say. We have formed a, what they call an alumni association, that's trying to do something for the older players. But fortunately, you know, I have no complaints. I've spent 12 and a little over 12 years in the big leagues, and I'm very happy.
Won 135 games?
I don't know.
145 games,
yeah.
Lost,
so,
lost 113.
Yeah. So, you know, I had a good career. I was the right place, the right. You know, starting off with Don Drysdale and then ended up with Cincinnati Reds, or even going into Detroit playing with Alan Trammell and playing under Sparky Anderson, Walter Alston, Ralph Houck.
Yeah, you had some.
I've been around guys like Vince Scully, Marty Brenneman, and I should remember his name, and I can't, but the announcer for Detroit for 100 years.
Ernie Harwell.
Yeah, Ernie Harwell, who.
I think this will be his last year.
Yeah, this is his last year. I just saw where he decided this is his last year. So from the booth down to the field, one of my favorite people in baseball. And I always come to the ballpark trying to be just the way he was, happy and love it. I love the game of baseball. I try to come to the ballpark happy every day. This is Joe Nutsall. Joe Nutsall, when he was a
Cincinnati.
Youngest player in major leagues. But he was been an announcer and Cincinnati radio announcer for years. And he's just somebody that I looked up to going to the ballpark. He's always happy. He always talks to people, very nice people.
Did you have a favorite park to pitch in?
Well, I can answer that two ways. The best park I love to go to is Dodger Stadium. My success in Dodger Stadium was okay. I pitched good and I pitched bad. It was funny because I was one of the teams that I said I didn't want to play for, and that's San Francisco. All I had to do, it seemed like, is to show up in San Francisco and I could beat them. You know, and it was just one of those things that, again, it was a confident thing. Also, I was a good sinking ball pitcher, and it was always cold there. And if you're a sinker ball pitcher and they hit the ball wrong, your hands are going to sting like crazy. So hitters, after a while, you don't feel like they're taking real good cuts off you. So I already always, my best success was probably in San Francisco.
Okay. Okay, so after you finished up with Boston, what did you do then?
I came home and didn't know what to do. That was one of my biggest fears, was graduating from high school. I didn't really have any other profession rather than throwing a baseball. Played winter ball a lot, just worked like crazy trying to make ends meet some winters when I came home. But I came home, met a friend of mine that had just quit from Shell Oil for years. He was an accountant, and we had another friend in sporting goods business. So I bought two sporting goods stores in the sporting goods business in Orlando, and traveled a little bit with my family. took summer vacations, which I'd never had for 20 years. 4th of July, I could stay home, have family picnics.
Watch the fireworks.
Watch the fireworks. But I went into business, and actually was still in business. I wanted to watch my kids grow up. They were in junior high and high school. My son's the oldest. He was in college. He was out of high school. My daughter was a senior in high school when I got an opportunity to come over here to Kissimmee and coach. And I talked to my family, came over here, and I've sold my sporting goods store, sold them a year after I got back. And I've been over here for 16 years, so I'm going to try not to work for a living the rest of my life. You know, this baseball is beautiful. I love it. It's a lot of fun.
There's new faces every year.
A lot of new faces every year. It's amazing. A couple of coaches been here a few years, and the coaching staff, the players, and everything else. It's amazing the turnover in baseball.
How is baseball different today than, say, when you played?
I don't think it's that different. I really don't. You know, everybody's saying the ball's harder. The kids are stronger. Ballparks now, when the new circular ballparks, you know, the Riverfront Stadium, Pittsburgh, you know, the Atlanta Stadium, but now they're tearing all those down and making stadiums to look like the old stadiums where they have a short porch or something like that. So
non-symmetrical.
Yeah, so the players, to me, because of the weight conditioning and everything, the ball is harder, players are stronger, players are more relaxed at home plate because you can't throw inside the way you used to.
Uh-huh.
And if you do throw inside, the guy that you hit once or twice, the next day he comes out and he's got like catcher's equipment on his arm to protect him. If you do throw inside once or twice during a ball game and it gets away from him, he goes inside a little too much, you hit a guy, the umpire warns you. They didn't have that, you know. Pitching inside was part of the game. Off the plate, pitching inside, off the plate was a much bigger part of the game. Now we try to teach people to throw off the plate some, but if you throw too much, you're going to get a warning. So the hitters are more comfortable, but bigger, more comfortable.
With the players you played with, what would be your all-star team?
Oh, that's a tough question. Well, it would definitely have to be Tony Perez. Joe Morgan. You know, I'm almost naming the Reds, you know.
That's the guys you played with again.
Right. You know, if you look back on all the teams I've played for, yeah, Joe Morgan, Lou Whitaker, Davey Concepcion's actually better shortstop than Alan Trammell. That's not saying Alan Trammell's not a great shortstop. It's a toss-up right there. Third base, as far as fielding, I would have to go with Aurelio Rodriguez for Detroit.
He's played for the Senators.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. As far as hitting, I'd have to go with Pete Rose, you know, was my third base. Johnny Bench, Hall of Famer. Lance Parrish was good as a young kid, but Johnny Bench was much, much better. Left field, you got to go with George Foster, hit the home runs and everything. He wasn't the best left fielder. Cesar Granma was the best center fielder. Ken Griffey Sr. was pretty good out there. So that's more or less the guys. But, you know, Tom Seaver is a pitcher, right-handed pitcher, Drysdale. I played with some pretty good guys.
If you could change anything about your career, what would it be?
I wouldn't change it. I had a great career. I'm completely happy with what I did. Everybody says, well, you spent 7 years in the minor leagues. Well, if I wouldn't have spent that 7 years in the minor leagues, I might not have been, and I'm not saying I was polished when I got to the big leagues, but I was ready for the big leagues. I was with World Series. People play 20 years in the big leagues and never get to World Series. I was a part of a team that won World Series. I was with Hall of Fame players. I was with Hall of Fame managers. Like I said earlier, you know, radio announcers, I was with Hall of Fame. I was with great people. We've been talking baseball. I've had a wife to follow me all over the world for 37 years. You know, I've had a wonderful, wonderful time in baseball. I got two wonderful children. I got four great grandkids, or grandkids. So I would not change one thing on my life. I tell people all the time in baseball, young kids coming out of high school, if I had it all over to do again, there'd be one thing I might do, but I wasn't a student. I might go to college. But it worked out fine with me. But I tell kids, unless they get that pot of gold as a top draft pick or big money out of high school, college education is very, very important.
Some of the fallback ones.
Yes, you need to, because the chances of making it at the big leagues, I was very lucky. You know, I think our percentages are like, from signing, you might have percentage 5%, 7% to make it to the big leagues. Being in baseball here in the minor league system, Houston Astros, we've had some great kids come through this season, through this organization. The ones I really feel sorry for are the kids that sign out of high school. They're good in sports, they're good in baseball, and then we release them and they don't get to the big leagues, fulfill their dream, but they can't go back to college and play baseball.
You gave up 176 homers in the majors, which isn't bad, but you eight Hall of Famers hit homers off of you, and one to be, Eddie Murray.
Eddie Murray hit one off?
Eddie Murray.
Sure. Eight Hall of Famers?
Eight Hall of Famers.
That's
Clemente, one. Aaron, five. Banks, one. Billy Williams, two. Johnny Bench, one. Willie McCovey, five. Willie Stargell, two. And Mike Schmidt, one.
That's
not a bad collection.
That's not a bad collection. There's not anybody. I thought I gave up more to Hank Aaron. That was my claim to fame, too. I gave up 714 to Hank Aaron. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No.
But it was opening day of 73. First at bat, Hank Aaron came up, and it was like almost a World Series game because he was going to tie Babe Ruth's record. He actually didn't want to play the game in Cincinnati. He wanted to go home and hit it in Atlanta to tie the record, and Bowie Kuhn more or less told him he needed to start. So the first time up, two men on, boom, three-run home run. So he tied Babe Ruth 7-14 off of it. But the guys that you named right there, there's nothing wrong with giving up home runs to them because they can hit.
Right. Do you know what your World Series earned run average was?
I know right now if you go to the Hall of Fame and punch in World Series pitching records, I come to the top of the list with the lowest ER in World Series.
0.35.
Yeah, 0.35.
Which is pretty good.
Right place at the right time. You know, I think I've given up one earned run in 25 and two-thirds innings, which is, in the record, you have to have 25 innings to get in the record run. So I did it by two-thirds, and I'm at the top of the list, but it's kind of, it's not embarrassing because I'm there, but it's funny to look at. They shoot out by 10 names. Whitey Ford's in there, Babe Ruth's in there, Lou Gehrig's in there. Lou Gehrig's
in
there.
Rivera might be in there. Rivera.
He could possibly be in there. You know, every time they mention him and then how low his ERA is, they mention championship series. So that includes all of them. My record is just the World Series.
Which is the key thing.
But some of these guys got 100, like Whitey Ford. He's probably got 140 innings in World Series play. And here I am sitting there with 25 and two-thirds. But I'm there. That's a big thing, you know.
Okay, well, that's all the questions I have, and I really enjoy this.
I appreciate it very much, and it's always nice talking baseball.
Yeah.